This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In a meeting with union members last week, Governor Evers announced proposed changes to the state's labor laws. Those would include rolling back Wisconsin's right-to-work law and reinstating the prevailing wage law.
We're going to begin to undo the harm that has been done to organized labor.
Wisconsin is one of 26 states, including neighboring Iowa and Michigan, that have right-to-work laws on the books. Evers' proposal puts him in line with what seems to be a small but growing move to restore previous pro-union rules. Our next guest is here to talk about the changing labor landscape and what the future could hold for unions nationwide. Merrick Masters is director of labor at Wayne State University, where he's a professor of business and adjunct professor of political science. Merrick, welcome back to Central Time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Before we dig into particular policies, have you seen tides moving back and forth when it comes to union laws? Have they been all moving in one direction? Are you seeing pushback? What's the big picture?
Well, I think for the past several years, they've been moving in an anti-union direction right after the Tea Party sweep of the 2010 midterm elections. You saw a wave of anti-union legislation led by Wisconsin, Ohio, and Michigan take effect. But after the 2018 elections, I think we've seen a change. The Democrats retook control of Congress. They picked up several gubernatorial seats, including seats in Michigan and in Wisconsin. Although they didn't capture the legislatures in those states, they did gain some seats. And I think nationally, the picture is more favorable to labor than it has been in quite some time. So I think that these issues are highly discussable, although it'll be difficult to get any pro-union legislation through legislatures. The dialogue's going to change, and the direction is moving more positively toward labor.
Is this strictly a partisan issue, these labor laws?
I think fundamentally, yes. There are a few issues that are as divisive between the parties as labor issues, and you can really tell the difference. That's partly because both parties are so polarized right now. You have one that has moved to the left, the Democratic Party, and the Republican Party for quite some time has been moving to the right. There's very little moderate wing of the party, the Republican Party left, that used to be pro-labor or willing to go along with labor on certain issues. That has vanished. And today you really have labor being one of the major wedge issues of our time.
These right-to-work laws, as supporters call them, I should say, have been one of the hot issues. Wisconsin was one of the most recent states, as you were mentioning, to get on board with this right-to-work legislation. First of all, talk us through what it does.
Well, right-to-work basically says that for those jurisdictions that are covered in right-to-work laws, for the most part, refer to the private sector under the National Labor Relations Act. In those situations, you can't negotiate the union or agency shop. You can't compel dues, basically, as a condition of continued employment. So when you negotiate a union shop, you have members that they don't join the union, but they're represented by the union. They have to pay union dues. That's fallen by the wayside with right to work. And many states, such as Wisconsin and Michigan, couple right to work as applied to the private sector to the public sector, but that is a moot point now because under the Janus Supreme Court decision, all the private sector is an open shop. You can't have any form of union security arrangement at federal, state, or local levels.
I'm sorry, all the public sector, right, under Janus?
Yeah, public sector, yes, under Janus. All the public sector now is an open shop.
And that in Wisconsin, we, in effect, led the way there, right? We had our Act 10 soon after Governor Walker came into office that took away a lot of labor protections and rights for public employees. There was a lot of protest at the time. Janus, in effect, made that irrelevant, right? That overrode that.
Yeah, Janus, several states had taken action with respect to right to work, Wisconsin being one of them. Some applied it to both the public and private sector, like Wisconsin and Michigan. And what Janus did was basically say that at state and local governments, for those 22 states that allowed the union or agency shop for some state and local employees, that no longer was valid. It was unconstitutional. And so essentially, with the laws being as they are in the federal government and with the Janus case, you have no area of the public sector which is allowing union security agreements such as the agency shop.
What have been the arguments from supporters of right to work? What's the case they're making about why an individual worker shouldn't be required to pay union dues if they don't want to in a union shop?
The basic argument boils down to it's anti-democratic, that you shouldn't compel people to pay dues against their will, particularly if the organization is using some of those dues for political purposes, and that secondarily, no other organization has such compulsory rights, or there are very few that have any such right outside of government, and therefore it's unfair to give unions this advantage. That's the basic argument in favor of right to work, which is a euphemism. There's no such thing as a right to work. It's really a right to not pay dues or have to pay dues if you're represented by an employee. The opposite side of the coin is that if you're represented by a union and the union incurs the costs of representing you and you get all the benefits of union representation, you should at least have to defray some of those costs. And that's what's done and had been done in the public sector with fair share agreements and in the private sector under union shop arrangements.
And you've written that since employers are able to impose a lot of conditions on employees, you don't see it as that unusual that a union that organizes at an employer could add in these similar rules.
To remember that the union doesn't unilaterally impose anything that would have to be agreed to by the parties. They would have to negotiate a union security agreement into a contract. And even prior to that, the union would have to be elected as a duly certified representative of the employees, and they can always be decertified. Or you could elect new leadership that didn't want the union security agreement as part of the contract. Many things could occur that could prevent the contract from taking effect. But it is a bilateral agreement between the employer and the employee and the employees represented by a union.
What has been the effect of these, again, I'll use the euphemism, right-to-work laws. What has the effect been on union membership around the country?
Well, let's look at your state, Wisconsin, which is different from the other states. In general, right-to-work discourages union membership, discourages union organizing activity to a significant extent. But in Wisconsin, where it was applied both to public and the private sector, although at different points in time, what we've seen since it has happened is a significant drop in both private sector union membership and also in public sector union membership. Since right to work took effect, before it took effect in Wisconsin, in the public sector where it was applied under Act 10, you had 175,000 union members in the public sector. Today, you only have 89,000. About 8 years ago, and this is considerably before, you had the right-to-work law applied in the private sector, but you had 354,000 union members in your state. You now have 218,000, and the number in the private sector, that 218,000, has dropped rather significantly in the past couple of years. So you might argue, based on at least that casual empirical evidence, that there's been a pretty negative impact. But Wisconsin, in the public sector, did some other things which were even more extreme. They disallowed the dues checkoff, and they required the automatic annual recertification of bargaining units in the public sector. Those things are tremendous hardships on unions and the people they represent and make it very difficult for those organizations to remain viable going concerns.
On a fundamental level, why do we have or need unions? Why should people be interested in the fate of unions for better or worse?
Because it's the only way people can collectively have a voice. I know it's very fashionable and popular to talk today about employers in the non-union sector that are more than willing to engage employees. Employee engagement is the mantra of the time. But really, that is a one-sided proposition. It's granted by the employer. It can be taken away by the employer. Union rights are something that are extended by law. And when you have a union protecting you, that union is an independent entity that can't be punished for representing you. And therefore, your collective voice has more weight and more protection under the law. And people can actually, I like to liken it this way. Under employee engagement, if you decide as an employee you want to say no, you could be punished for it and there's nothing you could do about it. If a union decides in the course of negotiations to say no, you can't punish the employees for that. And really, it seems to me that an employee voice doesn't matter much if you can't say no, that you have to be willing to push your case and argue your case and differ with management without adverse consequences.
Politically, do you see the Democratic Party and leading Democrats making a particularly forceful argument in favor of tipping the balance back toward unions?
I think the Democratic Party is more aligned in that direction today than it has been in quite some time. I would say that for a long period of time, the Democratic Party was relatively mute about labor rights. They paid lip service, took it. They took the labor PAC money, and then when it came time to do anything, they really didn't do much. But now things are different. I think because you have a more active space in the Democratic Party, electing a lot of new people to office, particularly a lot of women to office, who are very concerned about workplace issues and equity in the workplace, I think you now see a clarion call for some change in the balance of the employment relationship, more in the direction of favor of the employees as represented by unions.
We'll leave it there for now. Merrick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Merrick Masters is director of labor at Wayne at Wayne State University, where he's a professor of business and adjunct professor of political science. He joins today to talk about Governor Evers' call to repeal right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin and how our relationship to labor has changed over the last decade or so in American politics.